Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Marco Marquez. Let's talk to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. TSN Mike is his handle on Twitter. What's up, Mike? How are you?
I'm well, Stephen. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. Thank you so much for asking. Hey, before we get into the Final Four, I wanted to ask you a question. We were just having some fun with this a little bit earlier, because we were talking about Mizzou already landing a nice piece out of the transfer portal from Colorado State. And I just thought it's interesting. Here we are. The season's not even over yet. It'll be like if the two weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, other teams were allowed to go out and land free agents. And here we are. We're not even to the Final Four. And teams like Mizzou are already starting to rebuild their roster. I'm just curious. Like, I don't really feel anyway about it either way, but what do you think of the timing of that? Does that raise any eyebrows for you?
Well, I think that what one has to understand is that, okay, so when the Super Bowl's happening, it's February, right? And training camp doesn't start till July, so that's month 2 to month 7. That's 5 months. That's plenty of time for you to free agent and draft and all the rest of that stuff. In college, players finish their semesters in early April to early May, which is basically at the time of the Final Four to a month after. And then they need to enroll in other colleges. Colleges don't say on August 1st, yeah, we'll accept you. I mean, that's not how the usual academic year goes. You choose your college. For most high school students now are choosing their colleges by February. The majority of people make their decisions about their college choices from whomever accepts them. So it's just a different calendar, and I I'm not in love with it, but I understand the reality of it, that it's not really fair to the students to ask them to wait until all the rest of the games are played so that they can decide what they want to do with their futures. I don't think whether San Diego State or Florida Atlantic or UConn win the championship is all that important to the shooting guard at State U and where he or she goes on their next adventure.
Okay, so I mean, I honestly, I didn't watch any Colorado State basketball. Mizzou landed John Tonjay, who averaged 15 points a game for Colorado State and hopes to try to replace Des Moines Hodge or Golston. Any knowledge of him at all? He seemed like he was a pretty good player in the Mountain West this year.
Yeah, it was a disappointing team, Colorado State. They lost some big pieces off of what had been a terrific team the year before. They were expected to still be competitive, and they weren't really great. So there's that, but we've seen very good players come off of mediocre teams before. You're talking about a guy who shot 39% from three, is a good size wing at 6'5", and also shot well inside the arc, well over 50% inside the arc. So he's got all the numbers that you want to bring in for a wing player, without a doubt. He can absolutely help them next year. Now, you know, it's just a start for them, obviously, but you're talking about a guy who played huge minutes for them, 30-plus minutes. He worked his way up from his freshman year where he played but didn't start to having a very important rotation position on last year's team. Like I said, they went into the NCAA tournament as a 6 seed last year, were upset in the first round by Michigan, but had a really, really nice year. And last year's Mountain West was not a metric mirage. Last year's Mountain West was really good. This year's was not as great. Sort of like it was a most of the league, with the exception of San Diego State, was built on metrics that were too flattering to the actual teams. But Colorado State, a year ago, that he was a very important player, they were terrific.
Okay, so one other guy I wanted to ask you about, because, and look, there's a lot of schools that are excited about perhaps getting their hands on him, but Caleb Love, Mizzou was a finalist the first time around and then lost out to North Carolina. He's a St. Louis kid, and there's at least been some speculation that Mizzou could be a factor here. Maybe he might want to come home and play closer to home in St. Louis. He averaged 16.7 points a game, but shot like 29% from three, and some people feel like he took too many threes. And, maybe even though he averaged almost 17 points a game, maybe regressed as a player from the year before. I'm just curious what you think. Whatever team gets Caleb Love, what are they getting?
Well, they're getting a guy who is capable of turning a game. I don't think there's any question about that. You go back to the last year's Final Four run, championship game run, was pivoted on the Sweet 16 victory over UCLA, where UCLA locked down every single thing that Carolina wanted to do. So Caleb basically stepped back to 30 feet and said, "Try guarding me from out here," and started chucking in threes. And UCLA's defense wasn't built for that. I mean, their defense was built to deal with typical challenges, what you usually do, and they wrecked every single one that Carolina wanted to do. But when Caleb just started stepping back to 30 and started dropping in threes, they really didn't have an answer for that. And it won Carolina that game, and he was an important player the rest of the way. I wonder about his fit with Carolina this past year. You mentioned the abundance of threes they took. I do think that I think it's interesting. This is from afar, but I think it's interesting that R.J. Davis and Armando Bacot are coming back, and he's not. I haven't talked to anybody at Carolina. All that's happening while the Final Four, the Sweet 16's going on. I haven't talked to anybody down there, so I don't know why necessarily those two guys would be back and he would not.
Okay, Mike, let's get into the tournament. And for K-State, their magical run comes to an end against Florida Atlantic. And before we get into the K-State game in general, I want to ask you just what we make of the field of this Final Four. And I know, because I know what you're going to say, last year, just a year ago, it was blue bloods all over the place in the Final Four. This year, it's the opposite. You could say that Connecticut's a blue blood, but they're a four seed coming into this. Do you take any big conclusion out of the fact that this Final Four is not your traditional powerhouses? Does this say anything about the new era of college basketball?
I think that we first need to understand that unless we're going to make fifth year permanent, and there have been people who've advocated for that, I think John Gassaway might be, from ESPN, an advocate of that. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think I've seen him advocate for that. I'm not in favor of it, but unless we're going to do that, I don't think that you can take long-term conclusions out of it. I think that for as long as those players, and I think we've still got another year or two, maybe 12, I don't know, we've got another year or two for that to continue. Unless we're going to make that permanent, I don't think you can take long-term conclusions about the way these seasons are playing out. I think one thing that might be something that I sort of hit on yesterday that I've been concerned about for a while. I don't think that American basketball lately is turning out the level of prospect that we used to regularly. I mean, I go back when I was in college in 1979. The 1979 class, which is the year in which Isaiah Thomas came out of high school, Ralph Sampson, James Worthy, Dominique Wilkins, and that's just the start. I mean, I could keep going for a while. John Paxson was in that class. We used to have that was a rare year. It's often considered the greatest year in history. For those who are of a slightly younger group, the 95 class that had Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury and some others. I believe Sharif Abdul-Rahim might have been in that class. A lot of people point to 95 as a seminal class. But We don't have those anymore. And, when's the last time American basketball turned out a all-NBA-type player? We see a few younger players, international players like Giannis and people like that and Luka Doncic. But where is the American player who is doing that? And I think that's having an impact on why certain teams aren't able to be what they have been. I mean, the guys who are out recruiting five stars aren't getting the same level of talent that they once did. And that's one of the reasons why they're less dominant. I mean, Kyle Filipowski had a really nice freshman year, one of the better freshman years in the country. I mean, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20, I don't know what the exact time frame, that might have been the 15th best freshman year anybody had. Now it's probably the 5th or 6th. I don't know what the actual answer is, the exact right answer, why, but I see players that I see players that come up through the ranks now that should be great and aren't. And I use James Wiseman as an example of that. I mean, everything about him said this guy should be phenomenal. He's 7'1", he can run like a deer, he can shoot the ball, he plays above the rim, and yet he's not very good. Why? I don't know the answer to that. But I do think that has an impact on why college basketball is where it is right now. Maybe next year's class will come along and turn this all around. Let's hope. But we're not seeing it. Am I wrong? I mean, can you correct me on any of that?
I don't disagree with you, Mike, but did you correct me if I'm wrong on this? I feel like, isn't that what Kobe Bryant was trying to argue a few years ago? And I thought you were kind of pushing back on that a little bit. Like, I feel
because it wasn't happening then. I don't think that I don't think summer AAU basketball is the problem.
Okay.
I really don't. I don't think that playing summer basketball is the problem because we had too many generations, and generation in basketball is 5 or 6 years, but we had too many groups to go through. I think it's beyond that. I don't think that I am in love with the idea that you have to play elite prep school basketball to become great, because I'm not seeing it happen. I'm not seeing those guys that play in those places. I'm not seeing them. It happen for them. I don't know whether that's a good step or not. But I'm just not seeing now that that's become the trend. I just don't see those players coming out and becoming dominant college and NBA players.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest, Mike. K-State, of course, a very disappointing loss to FAU, missing out on an opportunity to go to the Final Four. And look, Butler was a great team, but at the time, we thought K-State would beat him back in 2010. And then a few years ago, they lost to Loyola Chicago, and now they lose to FAU in the Elite Eight. How big of a missed opportunity was this, and how would you just wrap up their first season under Jerome Tang?
Well, I think it's a significant, probably more significant even than the other two, because they had the dominant player on the floor in Marquise Noel. He was phenomenal throughout, and maybe he got a little tired at the end of the final game, but there were decisions made not just by him but by the entire team down the stretch that weren't in keeping with what they had done to beat Kentucky, with what they had done to win the Sweet 16 game against Michigan State. They weren't as sharp in those final minutes. And maybe it's the weight of the Final Four, seeing the Final Four. I don't know. But I thought that they had the better team on the floor for most of Saturday and not the last 5 minutes, unfortunately, for the Wildcats. But it was a phenomenal year. I mean, to build what they did as quickly as they did, for Marquise to come out and have at the best tournament that anybody's had. I remember in 2008, when I went to vote for the most outstanding player and the all-tournament team at the 2008 tournament, I went up to David Warlock, who is the in charge of media for the NCAA tournament, the wonderful guy. I said, can I vote for Steph Curry? Like, I know he's not here in San Antonio, but he's been the best player in the tournament. And I know the answer now, so I don't have to ask Dave again. You can't. So he did win the MOP of the East Region, and that was very well deserved. I was glad to see that they did that. Often it's sort of automatic to vote for somebody from the winning team, and instead they went with the best player, the player who mattered the most. But he would be someone that I would put on, if indeed it were not just for the Final Four games, I would put him on the ballot for that. I was really proud that we had him on our All-America team. A little bit itchy that he was our third point guard and on the third All-America team, because he did outperform our two terrific All-America point guards that were on the second team, Tyler Kolek from Marquette and Jalen Pickett from Penn State. He definitely proved to be superior to them. But at least we had him on our team. There were others who did not, so I was proud of that. I thought he was just dazzling, phenomenal, every word you could use, and the biggest reason that they were in the Elite Eight, starting with the fact that, remember, the story that's been told about how he sort of lobbied for Jerome Tang, and Jerome has turned out to be a hit, and Marquise stuck around when he could have gone anywhere in the country and played point guard for just about everybody, and instead he stuck around and he played point guard for the Wildcats and did a phenomenal job.
So you mentioned he was the best player. The other aspect of the game, though, was the fact that the other best player for K-State, Keontae Johnson, only played 18 minutes because of foul trouble. I'm hearing a lot of people saying that this was a problem this past weekend in the NCAA tournament, that so many great players were forced to sit on the bench because of foul trouble. Should something be done about that?
Oh, good God.
Mike, by the way, I backed away from the microphone like I just lit a firecracker, because I know where you're going to answer this.
But you thought you were lighting me up, not him.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, it's so ridiculous. When most fouls that are called are fouls. I'm going to exempt the one that was called against Ryan Nemhard in the final seconds of the Creighton at San Diego State game. But most fouls that are called are fouls. And I wasn't noticing as the game went along what Keontae was doing to get into foul trouble. It didn't occur to me. It was like it came upon me suddenly. Whereas it was pretty obvious what Drew Timmy in the Gonzaga UConn game did. And his third and fourth fouls were badly spent. You know, sometimes people, you get them, you know, you give them $100 and they don't spend it well. And you get five fouls. Don't spend it badly. Don't spend them badly. And that's what he did, Drew Timmy. I can't speak for Keontae. I do know that his fifth that was very badly spent, especially when one's sitting on four in an Elite Eight game. You can't foul that foul in that circumstance. Drew's were all of a sudden we're going to have a 6'11" guy driving to the hoop against guards. I mean, from 16 feet, that's a good play, really? Seriously, from the wing? Come on! I mean, that's just not smart basketball. And he's played four solid years. He's been a regular for 4 years. He's been an All-American for three. He's and his specialty is the offensive end. This isn't somebody who just stands back and blocks shots and, oh, by the way, he committed a charge on offense. His whole deal is offense, and he still tried that. It was a foolish play. And then the fourth foul, you can't get your elbows up around, your forearm up around an opponent's head, especially not when he's under the backboard. He can't do anything, your opponent, from there, except maybe get lucky. You already have him out of the play. Just let him go. And instead, gets his arm up around the guy's neck and shoulder, and that's going to happen. They're going to call that. So I thought they were poorly spent. I know what six-foul basketball looks like. Others don't. And that's both a blessing and curse of age, I guess. But I covered the Big East I covered it from 89 to 92. And I believe that's the period. I can't remember exactly whether they had it for every year that I covered the Big East directly. But I covered it all of those years, covering the Pitt Panthers full time. So I saw 40, 50 Big East games in person between the ones I covered involving the Panthers and the ones I would cover at the Big East tournament. And it's not good basketball. It's fouling all the time. You foul without consequence. In 40 minutes, six fouls is a ton. Do the math on six fouls for five players on the court in 40 minutes. You're stopping the game every 30 seconds. I can't remember who it was that I think it was John Gassaway from ESPN, again, that came up with this, that found the stat sheet for UConn for one of those seasons. And right now, we are seeing, and I don't know the numbers for this year, but last year it was 17 per team and change. 17 fouls a game were being called. And in those years, in one of those years, I think it was 91-92, let's say, UConn was committing, between the two teams, 22 fouls a game. So that's 10 extra fouls a game, basically, between the two teams. We're talking about 40-some fouls. So you're stopping the game more than once a minute for a foul. Is that what we want in basketball, really? It's garbage. There's no reason to have a sixth foul. The officials have too much consequence. Well, look, Ryan Nemhard didn't foul out on Sunday by putting his hand on Darian Trammell's hip. He didn't foul out, but the ref still had great consequence in the game. The only way to remove that consequence is to remove the ref. I don't think that's what we want. I don't think we want everybody out there calling their own fouls and then arguing for 2 hours about whether it was a foul. And we all know that happens because we all play pickup ball.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. Mike, before we let you go, let's get your thoughts on these two matchups, Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, then Miami and UConn. What do you think happens on Saturday?
Well, I've been impressed all year by San Diego State's defense. By watching, they're a fun team for a basketball junkie like me to follow because they play like at 10:30 and you DVR the game, and then when you wake up, you have something to watch. So I've watched a lot of San Diego State before I saw them in Louisville. It's even more impressive in person. They play a very physical brand of basketball. I think they do a pretty good job of that without fouling, although I do think the refs do tend to allow them to play the way they want to play. And I think part of it is because they are very intelligent about the way they use their physicality. It's another team that doesn't worry much about foul trouble because they play nine guys. And that is, you know, earlier in the tournament, I had been saying that UCLA is the most connected team in the tournament, the best connected team in the tournament. And what I decided after watching San Diego State is that while UCLA is about the most connected five or six player team where everybody basically is, you know, they're always on the floor together and they really respond well to one another. What makes San Diego State extraordinary and their connectedness, it goes to nine players. They don't care. Like, they want to be on the floor, don't get me wrong, but they want to win the game. And so whoever the coach decides has to be on the floor to win that game, they're all in. And there were guys like Matt Bradley who had a terrible regional. And Matt Bradley was their all-league first-team player, the only scorer they have who averages double figures, had a terrible time in Louisville. Barely made a shot in two games. And they found a way to respond and cover for that. Darian Trammell was the biggest part of that with his play. He filled the gap that Matt left open. And he had to do it on both ends because Bradley's an excellent defender. But you can't win without scoring. And he was not adding anything at that end for the most part. So they just are really connected. And that's going to be very hard for Florida Atlantic to deal with. Not that Florida Atlantic isn't an extremely together team, but they're younger, they're less physical. They do have probably a player or two who are more purely talented than San Diego State's best players. But they've got. I think the edge goes to SD State there because the game will probably be played as they wish it to be. And then the other one, I mean, I think you can try to find a way to make a case that UConn doesn't win. Certainly Miami is a tough cover, and they will have a hard time slowing Miami down. But UConn has everything. When it's working, they have everything. Andre Jackson's become a terrific leader at point guard. One of my favorite plays of the entire tournament was the play at the end of the first half of the Gonzaga game, where I can't remember who made the pass, but there was an entry pass that was made across the lane, which is not exactly the way you want to make an entry pass. You want to make it from the same side of the floor that you're throwing to, but they tried to make an entry pass across the lane, and instead of allowing a Gonzaga player to intercept it, Andre Jackson jumps in and intercepts it and immediately forwards it out to Alex Caravan on the right wing. It was just a brilliant play, and that's the kind of stuff that UConn is doing well, maybe not quite that degree, but the terrific plays are happening now as Andre has become their point guard of record. Tristan Newton's become kind of a supplemental point guard there. Jordan Hawkins has become an elite shooter, elite not just in terms of production, but he can get all the shots. He can score every way there is from the perimeter, catch and shoot, coming off a curl, dribbling into a shot. He's become really good at that. And they have the best center combination in college basketball. Hey, if they've given you either Donovan Clingan or Adama Sanogo, Kansas might have been able to win the national championship.
Oh.
All you needed was one.
Dang it,
they took them both.
So UConn wins it all, you think?
They should, yes, yeah. They should. They are by far the best team here. It is up to them to do it. They do have two very, if presuming they win the first game, they will have to encounter two very difficult and different challenges, I believe. The first one, Miami, doesn't defend that well, but is really hard to guard. And you saw that with Texas on Sunday. Texas couldn't find a way to stop Isaiah Wong. And then in the second game, if I'm right, that it's San Diego State, then you have to deal with the depth and the physicality and the orientation toward playing in the 60s. You'll have to deal with all of that. And that's not been something that UConn's seen a ton of. I mean, they saw a great defensive team in Alabama and beat them, but it's a different defensive team. They're not a grinded team. There's nobody in the Big East who really grinds you. Everybody wants to play. So that'll be a little bit of a different challenge for them, and obviously with a championship on the line, who knows what happens.
Hey, before I let you go, what was your reaction to Texas hiring Rodney Terry?
I was really pleased for Rodney. I think it's the right move. Rodney has shown himself to be a very capable head coach. He did in the when he was at Fresno. He's done it all the way through this season in a very challenging circumstance. He also has shown himself to be a high-end recruiter. He's the one who opened up the Texas to Canada pipeline, so to speak, that brought them Corey Joseph, that brought them Tristan Thompson and Mike Kabongo. He's the one who did that. He built that, and I'm sure he can find other inroads to build in recruiting now that he's in charge for real with the Longhorns. Very happy for him. He was our Sporting News Coach of the Year for taking over in very difficult circumstances and delivering on what he did, a runner-up finish in the Big 12 regular season, a terrific one-loss record over the regular season in what was the best conference in college basketball. I need to say that out loud because I keep getting accused of saying it about the Big 10 when I never did this season. I've said it before. It was in 2021. It may have been last year, but it was not this year. This year, the Big 12 was the best conference. And we'll see where it goes next year. But I think the Big 12 is going to have some really good teams again next year.
Mike, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
That's Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, our college basketball insider. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We talked to Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News already. We will talk to Gary Lezak next, Jamie Bluma, Bonnie Bernstein, and Jared Sutton between now and 10 o'clock. You guys both agree with Mike, UConn? It's the obvious choice, but
yeah.
Seems silly to pick the obvious choice in the year where nothing obvious has really happened. But
right.
maybe order is restored and UConn just blows through these next two games? I hope not. You know, why, how come UConn isn't considered a blue blood?
You know, I it's a great question. I think they should be, but I think part of it is, it's almost like, I think a lot of the blue bloods are more of a consistent presence. You know, like, it's weird with UConn.
That's
because
a moving target. I mean, like, what?
Well, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm just saying, like, when you look at Duke and Kansas and Kentucky, they seem to be a factor in the NCAA tournament almost every year.
Is Indiana still considered a blue blood?
I mean, I think their history says they are, but not over the last 20 years. So I think they're kind of like a former blue blood, you know?
But I mean, I know, like, they did a long time ago, like 1976 and the Great Indiana team, but
yeah,
I mean, that's, at some point you got to talk about what's happening now, right?
Yeah, but my point is, like, I wonder how many years out of this 25-year run has Connecticut completely missed out on the tournament.
But is that the criteria is?
I don't know.
What about winning championships?
I think it should be probably a pretty big one.
Doug Gottlieb tweeted this out. UConn has more titles since 1999 than UCLA, Kansas, Kentucky, and Indiana combined.
Yeah. I mean, I know that friends of mine that are not KU fans have thrown Connecticut in my face quite a bit about,
like, if they win this one, that's five since 1999.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
And yet they're not good enough to, like, as you say, to breathe your air.
Right. Yeah, they don't belong in our rarefied air. But I think they should be. And if they go out and win this one. But haven't they kind of disappeared from time to time? Like, where have they been over the last 5 years?
I mean, I don't know.
Doesn't that kind of make it a little bit of a different scenario? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I don't.
I'm not saying that means they shouldn't be a blue blood. You're asking me why people don't consider them that. Mm-hmm. And that's the best answer I can give you is that it seems like they pop up, they win a national title, and then they go away for a while.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I would hope you'd be honest, okay, although that's rolling the dice with you. Okay, what did you say the last 5 years? Where have they been?
Yeah.
Haven't done much. But like I said, they have won titles in 99, 2004, 2011, 2014. They have a chance to win one now.
Yeah. Okay?
Let's say they win this one. They're the favorites.
Yeah.
If they win this one and get their fifth title since 99, would you have rather been a UConn fan since 99 or a Kansas fan? You don't have all these conference championships, but you get five national championships.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Versus everything that Kansas has
accomplished. I think a lot of people you'll laugh right in my face, but I think I'd still rather have had the Kansas run.
You're an unbelievable suck ass.
I think that KU, like, it's I've said this several times, to me what's as impressive about anything that Bill Self has done or that Kansas has done is the run of NCAA tournaments they're on. The last time they missed the tournament was 1989 when they weren't allowed to play in it.
I don't think it's a ridiculous question to ask.
No, it's not at all. It's kind of like, you know, hey, look, if the Jayhawks hadn't won any national titles over that stretch, I would say UConn. But they have won two.
But five.
I know. It's a compelling question. But I think as a sports fan, I want to see my team be relevant every year. I want to have the hope that my team could do something special every year. And the thing is, like, amazingly under Bill Self, almost every tournament you feel like your team's got a shot to at least make the Final Four, if not win the whole thing. What have they made under Bill Self? I think they've made five Final Fours and won two national titles. I think that's right. Four or five Final Fours.
Yep, you're spot on there.
And they're like they're a top five seed like every year, you know? And so the whole year is fun if you're a Kansas fan. You got a chance to win the conference title. You know, you're a good team. I would not give that up for a couple more rings, but it's quite tempting.
Three more.
Yeah, three
maybe.
More. Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's quite tempting. But also, like, and how many coaches have they had? Is it their third or fourth coach during that stretch?
Well, they have three coaches between Calhoun and Kevin Ollie and now Hurley.
Yeah.
But that says something about the program itself.
Yeah, it does.
That you could win a national championship with three different coaches.
Mm-hmm. Because, like,
three straight coaches. Is that right? Three straight?
Yeah. If you look at.
If it happens.
Right. It's one of the crazier things, honestly. Like, how do you, because it feels like for everybody else, you just got to keep making it over and over and over again and hope that the dice fall your way one, you know, because it takes some luck, it takes some breaks and everything to win a national title. But like,
Panama Jack says, LOL, Nate would rather not win three more championships. Total BS.
Well, what's your team, Jack?
I don't think he can answer you. It's on Twitter. I mean,
I wonder if his team has any national titles.
Boy, you're jumping to conclusions.
Or conference titles. I just wonder.
What if he's a UConn guy?
Maybe he is a UConn guy. Good for him.
What if it's a KU guy?
And I'm not saying he's wrong.
You're jumping to conclusions.
Matt, over
yeah.
here. I just asked the question.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's okay. So Marco, what would you rather have?
Me?
Yeah.
KU. It's for the same reasons Nate said. I'm consistent each year. I think you get a better quality of basketball, not only in the peak years, but just throughout each year. You get the better head coach, Bill Self. Not only do you get success in March, but you're enjoying just all of it throughout the whole basketball season, non-con and conference. So, I mean, what I'm looking at right now is just UConn's history in the tournament. And, I mean, around those national titles and the one Final Four that they've made without winning a national title, 2009, it's first-round exit, second-round exit.
I wonder how many times do they miss the tournament altogether?
Well, and that's another thing, too. There's years in between those national titles where they missed the tournament. So, like, 2014, they missed in 2015 after winning the national title. Then they went 5 years without making it in between 2016 and 2021. Of course, 2020 is canceled.
5 years in a row without making the tournament.
5 years in a row without making the tournament, one of those years being the COVID year. So, four, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that right there, that seals it for me. You know, I like being – it's fun being a Kansas fan and just knowing you're going to the tournament every year. You get to be a part of March Madness. And we talked about this. This is like for me as a Kansas fan, the NCAA tournament is one of the greatest events, sporting events there is. I know you've talked about the second weekend of the NFL playoffs is your favorite sports
That's
weekend, right?
Right.
I would say the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is probably my favorite sports weekend of the sports calendar.
Yeah, man, divisional round's awesome.
The divisional round is awesome. I love it. Love it with all my heart. But that's how much I love the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, you know? And so knowing your team's going to be a part of it makes it so much more fun. And you just basically just write it down before the season even starts as a Kansas fan. And that shouldn't be taken for granted because teams like North Carolina miss out on going. You know, that's why, look, I'm not minimizing how great it would be to win national titles. I would love to win more national titles for sure. That's
not
a good
that,
question.
Not that great, though, apparently.
Nope.
That's wild. That's wild to me.
What would you? Would you take the Connecticut route?
I'm looking for, I don't know, I guess I'm championships, man.
I mean, let's go back to 2016. Who would you say was the better coach of all time, Calhoun or Bill Self? Because I used to get arguments all the time in KU with KU fans, students, all the time, because they'd be all over Bill Self. But I would use the national championship argument there with Calhoun. I was on the Calhoun side, but I mean, since then, I think my opinion's changed. I think Bill Self now, but...
Well, Self's got as many titles as him now, right? He won two?
No, I think Calhoun has three.
He won three?
But just now seeing what Bill Self's done, breaking the conference regular season title streak, breaking UCLA's record that stood for so long, just what he's done in the regular season and in March, too. Maybe he's not there with three national titles, but, I mean... Got more.
Three. Yeah, he won three. Yeah.
That was one of the big arguments that I remember having in Lawrence my freshman year.
That's pretty good. Three national championships.
Real good.
I mean, it's one of those things where he built this program up, and maybe now they just continue to reap those benefits. I mean, Kevin Ollie, he was kind of a... I don't know what the exact word is, but he won with a seven-seeded team and he wasn't there for very long.
Right, because, I mean, they went in the tank. And that's why they hired Dan Hurley. It's taken them several years to get back, and now they're on the cusp of winning another one.
I like Dan Hurley a lot. I like him a lot. Listening to him do interviews and everything, I get a kick out of him.
All right, we'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Gary Lezak. Hello, Gary.
Good morning. Are you ready for spring weather?
Yeah, I'm tired of the rain. Let's make it nice now.
It snowed this morning just north of Kansas City. Maybe a few snowflakes mixed in here. I don't know if you saw any on your way to work. They're called slush droplets, if you saw any. They'd be like little snow particles mixed in with the rain. Did you see any slush droplets?
No, just some sprinkles in the morning. That's all.
Some sprinkles in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
And, there was a little touch of snow up in northern Missouri. So, but it's onward. You know, we're going to start warming up. The last freeze. Is Nate there?
No, he
I'm
left.
Here.
What? Oh.
Hello.
Hi.
What's going on with that phone?
It's not my phone.
We're going to redial Gary Lezak because his it almost sounds like his phone is farting right now. So we're going to.
I was going to say Morse code was right. Happening, but yeah, that too. He was ripping one.
Right. Yeah, we'll get you the forecast for today, and hopefully another quick look ahead to opening day on Thursday at a Kauffman Stadium.
He said it's supposed to start warming up.
Warm. He said it sounds like it's going to be great for opening day.
It's usually terrible on opening day.
Get your tickets at ticketsforless.com.
That's right.
And when you check out, use code STJOHN, STJOHN, and man, oh man, will you get a good deal. And Tickets for Less. Always get good deals there, but an even better deal when you use my code STJOHN.
I got that farting all out. All
that's gone. Right. Go ahead, Gary.
You have some beans for dinner?
No, I do have a joke for you.
Okay.
Finally, my winter fat is gone. Now I have spring rolls.
I'd love to have spring rolls right now.
I love a good spring roll.
Right now, with lots and lots of frosting. Do you like that stuff?
Frosting?
Spring rolls would be like the things that you have, you know, the vegetables rolled up in a...
Right. Kind of like an egg roll, but a more...
I'm thinking like
cinnamon rolls.
Cinnamon
rolls.
Yeah,
I smell cinnamon rolls.
Spring rolls are very different. Yeah. Very right. Different than cinnamon rolls.
Yeah, spring rolls can be fried, or they don't have to be. You know, you can have like you go to the Vietnamese restaurant and you get these spring rolls that are just delicious that are not fried.
Right.
With shrimp and veggies in there, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh my, it's really really good stuff. So anyway, my point was earlier. If I tell you our last freeze of the season is within 3 weeks. That's good news, right?
Sure it is, but I like, how many times is it going to freeze in the next 3 weeks?
Well, tonight, down to 9 or 32 degrees.
Yeah.
Thursday night, the low temperature will be near 60. The low. Wow. Thank you. And then Friday night, back down to near freezing. So we have another freeze or two, or let me tell you, within 3 weeks, though, within 2 weeks probably, it'll be our last freeze.
Okay.
So the growing season is going to begin. Exciting?
And you're still expecting it to be beautiful on opening day?
Yes, I do expect sunshine, no rain. Remember, we put that forecast out 2 months ago, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHP.
Right.
And that forecast is verifying. Sunny, a little breezy, so a wind factor. But Thursday, for the game, first pitch out at the K,
No! Get out of here!
I believe you when I see it.
First pitch.
I thought that wasn't too early. It's not
too
early.
It's kind of too early. I mean,
he's saying it right here. It's Gary Lezak. Are you making this up, Gary?
No, I'm analyzing it. I just came to the conclusion that that'll be the first pitch temperature. Celebrate.
If it's not 69 on Thursday, I'm revoking the celebration.
It will be. Okay, the last 5 times.
You said it's going to be windy, Gary. Is the wind going to be blowing out? Like, are we going to have some home runs, some dingers?
Yeah, the wind will be blowing out.
Yes.
Left field, left center field. That's right. Pitch on the way. It's blasted to deep left center field, and it is gone.
Whammy.
Baseball season begins on Thursday. All right. And 69 for the forecast high temperature. There'll be some clouds moving in. No rain for the game. All right? Sunny and breezy. Friday, chance of some thunderstorms. We'll see about any severe weather risk. See how that sets up. It'll blow through here real quick. Speaking of blowing. And 75 to 80 Friday. How about that?
That's real good.
And then it'll turn colder on Saturday. It'll be dry for game two. Dry for game two on Saturday. Sunny. Beautiful day, 50s. That might be even a better day because it's not going to be that windy Saturday, so it should be pretty good. I just gave you the forecast. I did weather today. I did weather.
Sounds great.
Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
That is Gary Lezak back after this on WHP.